Welcome back to Fine Tuning with Drew Taylor, your one-stop shop when it comes to animation news and commentary. I'm entertainment writer Jim Hill, and Mr. Taylor, whose writings on the industry you can regularly read over on The Wrap, and whose musings on the Mission Impossible movies you can listen to on Light the Fuse, the official Mission Impossible podcast, he and I are recording this week's show on Tuesday, March 12th, 2024, which, by the way, Drew, happens to be my 65th birthday.
Oh my God. Happy birthday, Jim.
Well, now what's interesting is Google tells me that this is the age I'm supposed to start planning my retirement as well as apply to Medicare. It also tells me that 10,000 people turn 65 every day in the United States, which my way of thinking is kind of a bummer of a birthday message. It's like, you're not special. This is happening to 10,000 people at the very same day. And more to the point, you better start planning for your declining years right now. So, which is why I say, screw that noise. I want to talk about cartoons. So, toward that end, let's now talk about the 96th Academy Awards. See, there is somebody older than me on this planet. It's the little gold guy named Oscar. And was it a surprise to you that Oppenheimer did as well as it did this past Sunday night?
No, I don't think so. I suspected it would be a big powerhouse. But it was a lovely show, I thought. Did you watch, Jim?
I did. Well, Nancy had it on while I was working, and I periodically turn around and watch John Cena, you know, with an envelope in front of his crotch. But by the way, did it surprise you when The Boy and the Heron took the Academy Award for Best Animated Feature? Because worth noting here, it certainly surprised the folks at Entertainment Weekly, who, how long did they have up that message congratulating Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse?
Oh, I didn't see that. Was that up on their social media?
Yeah, Twitter. It was up there for way too long.
Yikes.
Well, look, I mean, seriously, given the way the Academy Awards work, and more often than not, you get the award not necessarily for the film you're nominated for, but your life's work, as it were. So it's, well, I don't think it was all that surprising that Hayao Miyazaki got, you know, because face it, Hayao Miyazaki said going into this is my last movie. And then what? Before it even opened here in the States, Studio Ghibli began walking that back, right? It's like he's coming into work every day. He's working on a new movie. So, you know, it's like,
I love that he didn't show up either. That's just such a great Miyazaki thing to do. Yeah, I thought that this was the front runner. I know that people thought there was, you know, on Gold Derby or some one of the sites, that it was actually an upset. You know, those of us that actually exist in the animation world every day sort of knew that this was not only one that people really appreciated, but like you said, it does feel like a lifetime achievement award in some respects. Although you're right, he could be back, and I don't know. I just wish that this movie was available wider. Although, did you see that it is coming back to theaters? So you have another shot, Jim.
I do. And I plan to take advantage of that shot. On the other hand, I'm wondering where I can go to see War Is Over, inspired by the music of John and Yoko. And by the way, congrats to David Mullins. And by the way, I also kind of love that Sean Lennon took his moment on stage to extort the audience to wish his 92-year-old mom, Yoko Ono, a happy Mother's Day back in England.
Yeah, that was cute. Yeah, I wish you could see it too. I don't know how I got sent a link to it. I thought it was really, really charming. The animation is really cool. I love that Dave gave Peter Jackson a shout out, because apparently this would not have been achievable without the folks at Weta. Yeah, really wonderful short. I'm glad it won.
Well, again, the subtitle of this is, of course, inspired by the music of John and Yoko. And by the way, I don't know, just in the last week or two, there's been this video circulating back when, from February of 1972, this was when John and Yoko were the week-long co-hosts of the Mike Douglas Show. And it's this amazing moment where John is getting to perform on stage with his musical hero, Chuck Berry. And they're playing Johnny B. Good, but Yoko is doing Yoko's shtick, which is screaming into the microphone, you know, right next to them. There's this amazing moment, you know, they catch on camera of Chuck Berry sort of side-eyeing Yoko to the effect of, you know, let's look, I don't know what song you're doing, but we're doing Johnny B. Good. And there's also this great story about the sound man on the Mike Douglas show who's watching this going on and literally decides, I'm cutting the power to Yoko's mic. You know, she doesn't have to know, but people want to hear, you know, John Lennon and Chuck Berry do Johnny B. Good. Did you ever, you're really too young to have ever watched the Mike Douglas show. I mean, I think it finished its run in like 81, but have you ever seen this on YouTube or
no, I'm going to look this up soon because, you know, I'm a big fan of Chuck Berry's cousin, you know, Marvin Berry, who heard a young Marty McFly and said,
"There we go." Oh, yes. I wonder, has anybody who's seen the Back to the Future musical, the one that ran on the West End and has been running on Broadway for a while now, do they do that moment in the show? They got to do that moment.
You know, it's coming to the Pantages, Jim, so I think
is
I have
really?
To...
Is it really? Oh, yeah. Cool. All right. Anyway, one last Mike Douglas story before we go, because, again, when I was young, February 72, I was just 13. But what was fun about Mike Douglas was that he loved these weird pairings. So, for example, there was the week that comedian Tony Fields was the co-host, and that was when Kiss came on the show. And there's this great story that Gene Simmons tells about how after they finish performing, Gene goes back to the dressing room, takes off his outfit and wipes off his makeup and is walking by Toadie's dressing room and goes in to thank her for being so nice in the segment. And she doesn't recognize him initially. And then explains, I'm in Kiss. I'm the guy with the giant tongue. And she just starts to laugh because it's like, oh, my God, it's a bit. You're a nice Jewish boy. You know, so who knew?
It's funny to think about Mike Douglas and Kiss sharing the same space.
Totally. No, that's worth watching in and of itself because there's Mike in his very plaid jacket being, you know, a nice from the Midwest host, you know, again, try with the entirety of Kiss, you know, sort of sitting in those weird little chairs that they used to use, you know, for the interview segments. And it's, again, well worth checking out. All right. Anyway, I know this is the animation podcast. We should get to animation news and we will soon. But first, I want to remind you that the news portion of today's show is brought to you by touringplans.com. And if you're headed down to Orlando anytime soon to visit some of the theme parks you'll find there, Touring Plans can help you save time. More importantly, it can help you save money. So before you book that flight to Central Florida, go check out touringplans.com and you can thank us later.
And this is not just blowing smoke up Touring Plans' behind, but I feel like you could not need Touring Plans more than right now.
I got to admit, it feels like to me going to, especially to the Disney parks these days, it's just sort of like, I didn't do well in algebra in high school. And I just feel like now it's like, okay, X plus Y equals when I should get in line for Peter Pan. And
right.
It's just sort of like, I used to go have a good time at Disney World. I didn't have to be face down on my phone and know that, okay, the app says, you know, I can now get, you know, I can now go into the restaurant and pick up my food. You know, the irony, it's a quick service restaurant, but don't come in. You got to be on your phone first. So, all right. Anyway, enough whining. Okay, so let's start by talking about how Kung Fu Panda 4 did at the box office this past weekend. And look, Universal has to be pleased. I mean, it was supposed to make $50 million over the first 3 days in the North American theaters and actually overperformed, did $58 million, which for a film, which is a sequel to a movie that came out 8 years ago, that's kind of impressive, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think this movie is really good. And, you know, the other thing is that I've seen so many parents on social media talk about how there's just nothing to take their kids to see in theaters. You know, when I was little, there was a ton of stuff between live action things and animation, and there just isn't that anymore. So I think that this one really, really filled a niche that parents and families were looking for. And yeah, it's really good. Did you go see it, Jim?
Not yet. Not yet. This was a weekend where, well, we had a six-year-old's birthday and a baby shower. So, you know, I had to push off, you know, going to see stuff for work. I'm going to try to get that done this week.
Yeah, and Jim, I know you say that I have to be better about pushing things. If anybody is going to the Academy screening of Kung Fu Panda this Saturday, please say hello afterwards. I'm doing the Q&A with the crew, Jack Black will not be there, but a lot of the crew of Kung Fu Panda 4 will be there, and we will be chatting about that movie. So come say hello.
There you go, folks. You know, be sure to check that out. Now, doubling back to how well Kung Fu Panda 4 did this past weekend, I have to give the folks at NBC Universal credit that you know, I mean, face it, they did very well last year with Puss in Boots: The Last Wish, which did damn near $500 million worth of business worldwide in late 2022, early 2023. And what was interesting is that NBC Universal mounted a similar promotional campaign for Kung Fu Panda 4. And by the way, if you go over to Deadline, they have this amazing story about the Symphony program. Evidently, that's what NBC Universal uses to coordinate promotional efforts across that conglomerate's various platforms. And it basically talks about how everything from the new Poe balloon that debuted in last year's Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, all the way through to the toys in Burger King's most recent Kids Club meal, were all used to raise awareness of Kung Fu Panda 4, and that clearly worked. But a little bit of three-dimensional chess here, though. Universal Pictures used Kung Fu Panda 4's debut in theaters as a way to raise awareness of DreamWorks Animation's next original movie, The Wild Robot, which is based on Peter Brown's best-selling series of books. What did you think of that trailer, Drew?
Oh, I thought that trailer was an absolute masterpiece. I mean, I was tearing up by the end. I thought it was just so special. And I think the look is so beautiful. And, you know, for years, people have told me it's Bambi meets WALL-E. And that is what it looks like. I mean, the animals do talk. That is one of the differences.
Oh, okay.
So Pedro Pascal is the fox. Lupita Nyong'o, obviously, is the robot. And, you know, there's various celebrities playing various animals. But I just thought I was totally blown away. Like, totally blown away.
I reacted so strongly to this trailer. I literally watched it and immediately went over to Amazon and ordered, there's evidently a collection of the three Wild Robot books that have been written to date. And it was just one of these things where I want to walk into the theater knowing the source material for this thing, because that just looked amazing. I mean, there was so much great acting from an animation point of view in this. And for example, that moment where you see the sea otters bring the robot to life by accident, and they sort of scramble out of the capsule. There's this wonderful little moment in the footage where they cut back to the robot is coming to life, and they cut to the sea otters in the water, and there's, you know, a little sea otter kind of trying to get close, and you literally see the parent sort of reach out and push the young one behind it, as in to protect it from whatever this was. And it's like, man, that's smart.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just good stuff. Just cannot wait.
You talk about Symphony, that there was a book. The book arrived at my doorstep, Jim, with a little thank you note from Chris Sanders on the morning the trailer debuted. If that is not coordinated, I mean, I do not know what is. And it's interesting because the Oscars just finished up, and I feel like, oh, we have a front runner already.
The one thing that kind of concerns me is that this movie is headed into theaters on September 20th of this year. And I have to admit, I'm intrigued by that release date, because it's between Labor Day and Columbus Day. The kids are back in school. For me, this doesn't seem like an obvious place to drop a brand new animated feature. Any idea what the plan is here?
That's actually really interesting, Jim. I have not inquired as to why that release date. I think it's just that Universal has so many colossal things coming out at the end of the year, including Wicked Part 1. But I think the hope is that we're going to see a similar situation to Puss in Boots: The Last Wish, where it ends up playing in theaters forever. Part of the Universal model is getting things to PVOD very quickly, and I hope that they kind of give this one a little bit more room, because it just seems like it should be experienced on the biggest screen possible. And yeah, I understand that it will be at Annecy this year. I don't know if the full finished movie will be, but certainly a preview. So I'm just so excited.
Cannot wait.
Yeah.
Though I also have to say that the trailer for Inside Out 2 that dropped in the same window of time, I got to say, on the heels of this, I have a lot more confidence in this film than I previously did. I mean, the new emotions, anxiety, envy, embarrassment, ennui. Yeah, I mean, if Riley's turning into from a tween to a teenager, those would definitely be emotions she's experienced. And there were a couple of things in the trailer that I really thought were smart. I mean, the notion of the repressed emotions, or for that matter, the sarcasm. And also, you know, the whole notion of now it's joy, sadness, fear, anger, and disgust who now have to work together to get, you know, across the weird terrain of Riley's brain and get back to the control center. Right? That seems like a smart place to set a sequel, you know, someplace new that's also familiar. What did you think?
Yeah, I thought it looked really good. I do miss Mindy Kaling and Bill Hader. I don't know why they couldn't have closed those deals, but there's interesting things when bringing people back for sequels. But yeah, I think it looks great. And, you know, there's more Inside Out 2 coming as well that has not been revealed yet. So I will keep my mouth shut for now, but there's a lot of Inside Out stuff happening soon, and I thought the animation looked beautiful. Yeah, I'm really excited.
Same thing here. And again, that's going to arrive in theaters on June 14th of this year.
And it'll suck every dollar out of your pocket soon after. Yeah.
Well, we jump ahead to April of 2026 now, a movie that's also certainly going to suck the money out of everyone's wallets is the one that just got announced this Monday, March 10th. We learned that Illuminations is teaming up with Nintendo to produce another movie set in the Super Mario realm. Which, again, not a surprise. Super Mario Brothers movie, released in theaters April of last year, did $1.3 billion worth of business, $574 million of that stateside, another $787 million overseas. And also, didn't we see a green spotted egg in, like, the end scene of the Super Mario
Brothers movie? Oh, yeah, that's right. Yoshi should make an appearance, yeah. I mean, this was the worst kept secret in animation, I feel like, Jim. I mean, I feel like they were actually working on this, like, before the first one came out, right?
No, you're not wrong. But what's interesting is that no one is saying that this is a direct sequel to the Super Mario Brothers movie. In fact, the word coming out of Nintendo is that they are broadening Mario's world further, and that this movie story will be set in the world of Super Mario Brothers. But beyond that, all we know is we have a release date, April 3rd, 2026, and basically 3 years to the day when the Super Mario Brothers movie came out last year.
Yeah. And you know you don't get a movie 3 years to the day without already having worked on it for 2 years at this point. So, yes.
Isn't that the famous, the Roy Disney fight that he had with Katzenberg? It's like, Jeffrey once said, you can turn out a new movie in 3.5 years, and I think it's Roy E. who's like, no, it's 3 years and 9 months. You need those 3 months.
Yeah, I just hope that this one is a little bit more irreverent, a little bit more fun than the first one, that we get that Teen Titans Go energy, Jim, is what I want.
Excellent idea. Excellent idea. Oh, by the way, fun fact, the info for this was released on March 10th, which is Mario Day, as in, you know, the first three letters of March, M-A-R, and then the one and the zero. They're for Mario.
Cute.
Okay, yep. Now, not so fun fact. Last Wednesday, March 6th, we learned that after being in business for 21 years, Rooster's Teeth is closing. And these are the incredibly talented folks behind the fun animated comedy series, Red and Blue. 150 people are now out of work. thanks again to the wonderful management team at Warner Brothers Discovery, the very same folks who put Coyote versus Acme and Scooby Holiday Haunt in the vault, never to be seen again, because, well, why make and release movies when corporate Hollywood, what they really want is a sizable tax write-off? Is there any news out there about Coyote and Acme?
No, nothing. I have not heard any. I saw Sammy Birch was on the red carpet. You know, she was nominated for May, December for Best Original Screenplay. And she said, you know, there's still hope. But from what I understand, I think that it was most likely written down as part of that $114 million write-off that was revealed during the recent quarterly earnings call. So barring a miracle. Yeah, it sucks. I mean, I would love to see Scoob Hunt and Holiday, too. I think Eric Bauza just shared an image last night from the day the world blew up, the Looney Tunes feature, which will see the light of day, I think, maybe on Amazon. But it's depressing over there. Because did you also see that thing where they were deleting all these games off of the app stores and a lot of actually Adult Swim related games? So if you have, including, I think, the Samurai Jack game, which is actually really good if you haven't played it.
And speaking of things that make me sad, Akira Toriyama, the Japanese manga artist and character designer who's probably best known as the creator of Dragon Ball, he died on March 1st at the age of 68. And the news that's been coming out of Tokyo over the past couple days suggests that his sad passing comes on the heel of a bit of surgery. Evidently, he had been diagnosed with a brain tumor that they were trying to get, and it just didn't work out. So our heartfelt condolences to Akira's friends, family, and colleagues at this sad, sad time. And another bit of bad news, which we'll get to on the second half of today's show, is the closure of the Disney Movie Club. Now, Mr. Taylor will be driving the bus on this segment, but first, this... And we're back. I mentioned at the top of the show, it's March 12th. This is the day, if you feel the need, folks, to go out and buy the physical media version of Disney Wish, that it's going to show up on store shelves, just not at Best Buy. Have you seen any of the photos of the Best Buys with their physical media section?
It's so depressing, Jim. It is so depressing.
Oh, my God. It's like, you know, it's like standing at the edge of the Grand Canyon. It's like, woof. You know.
But, you know, Walmart has picked up the slack. If you want the really beautiful Steelbook edition of Wish on 4K, which I have, and it is lovely. Go to Walmart, pick that up.
Okay, now again, just a reminder, Wish is one of the last titles to be produced by Walt Disney Studios Home Entertainment under the new licensing agreement announced late last month. Sony Pictures Home Entertainment will be taking over production of any Disney physical media. Walt Disney Studios will still control digital distribution of its newest titles and legacy media. And sadly, one of the things that's going to disappear as part of this new deal is the Disney Movie Club. Now, I folks, to sort of give you a little background here, Drew, how long have you been a member of the Disney Movie Club at this point?
Oh, years and years. And we'll talk about why. But yeah, it's a relatively recent, in terms of Disney enterprise, right? I mean, it only started, I don't know, few years ago, but
well, actually, 2001. In fact, and I'm quoting your February 20th piece over on the Wrap, by the way. Here, it was a Columbia House like service that provided exclusive titles on Blu-ray and DVD and heavily discounted catalog titles. And so, and what I love about your description is every month you'd get the latest home video release, which was usually festooned with extras like lithos and collectible pins. So I'm assuming Katie was never happy when the Disney Movie Club box showed up at the house.
Yeah, yeah. She just got back from a European trip, and she said, you know, it was so nice. Not one DVD showed up to my hotel room. And I said, well, listen, this is the cost of doing business here. But yeah, they would always throw in something special. You know, you would have the option to opt in and meet your requirement for whatever, you know, you had to pay full price on a few titles. But what I wanted to say is that right now, all of the Disney Movie Club exclusive titles are on sale for $10 with no minimum requirement. You don't have to pay full price. So Jim did a giant box of Disney Movie Club exclusive titles show up at my door. It did. Because, you know, you cannot count on Blackbeard's Ghost being available anywhere else, Jim. You know what I mean?
Periodically, you would let me know what had just arrived in the mail. And they did work the obscure side of the catalog. Of those, what's your favorite? It's like, ooh, I got my hands on this.
Yeah, I mean, I was really excited to get stuff like Monkeys Go Home in this batch. There's a lot of the 60s live action stuff, which is such a black hole for so many, you know. And they didn't do everything. You know, you didn't get The Littlest Horse Thief on Blu-ray or something. But what I really wanted to impart to our animation fans, too, is that this was the only place that you could get on Blu-ray things like The Black Cauldron or The Three Caballeros or Saludos Amigos or Make Mine Music and Melody Time. Although we've talked about the Melody Time issue with one of the missing shorts that they didn't advertise. And it just seems weird that they didn't include that given the kind of collector's market. Like, this was not something that would show up at Walmart. So why not just put it on there? But still, a goofy movie and an extremely goofy movie, as popular as you think those are, not popular enough to have them in store shelves. You could only get them through the Disney Movie Club. Additionally, things like Rapunzel's Tangled Adventures, the complete set, which is one of the things I just picked up and I'm so excited about, on Disney Movie Club in a beautiful box set. You know, so I was always really looking forward to what they were going to kind of pull out of the vault and release themselves. And I was rarely disappointed, Jim. I now own a physical copy of the Gnome Mobile in the year of our Lord 2024. I mean, amazing.
And that, forgive me for making that noise, but if you understand what the Gnome Mobile was, I mean, it was kind of one of the very last things that Walt worked on. It's also got that weird moment in the middle, you know, when you first meet the gnomes, where suddenly there are audio animatronic animals on screen talking with the gnomes. So it was one of these moments where, you know, the theme parks and the movies lined up for a little bit. And it just sort of, the notion of, just makes you wonder if Walt had lived another 5-10 years, you know, what else we would have seen in films. And speaking of which, and forgive me, I'm being entirely self-indulgent here, but do you know if the Disney Movie Club ever made Scandalous John available?
There might have been a DVD. It's not on Blu-ray. This is how I was kind of limiting myself, Jim, is that there are so many things on DVD as well that they put out, but I don't know.
Okay, because I've got a VHS of Scandalous John, and I don't know if you've ever heard of this movie. It's kind of Disney's Don Quixote, where it's Brian Keith in a lot of makeup, supposed to be like this 80 or 90-year-old rancher who's going to go on one last cattle drive because his ranch is being taken to be turned into, I want to say, a dam, you know, that will serve the American Southwest. But he's only got one cow left, and so he's taking his one cow to market. And what's weird about it, I mean, you know, you were mentioning Monkeys Go Home with a Gnome Mobile or that sort of thing. So you know from these names, Bill Walsh and Don DeGrady, they basically wrote everything that Disney did in the 60s. And it was one of these things where it's like they wrote this sort of attempt at a comic, you know, hip now version of Don Quixote that that ends with the world's worst fake train wreck. I mean, you know, these things might as well have HO on the side of them when they crash on screen. And then then the kicker is the villain of the movie is a 5-year-old. Well, all right, 15, maybe 25. John Ritter.
Oh, wow.
There's brilliant casting. John Ritter is the corporate guy who accidentally kills the modern Don Quixote. It's a strange, strange movie.
So it is available on DVD through the Disney Movie Club. So if you want to have a similar experience like Jim of thinking that your punch was spiked, please pick that up in the waning days. I think the last day to order is like May 10th or something.
May 20th. I actually just checked that. But yeah, okay. Then I'm headed there as soon as we're done here today. Oh, and speaking of which, forgot to mention this on the last show. Thank you again about Glago's guest.
Oh, what'd you think?
What's fascinating to me is I would, you know, the other one from this year, a kind of TikTok tale that also got very, very limited. You know, this is a Disney company trying to figure out how to use CG to tell stories. And so that kind of determined the shapes and the style of the animation. But I actually thought it was a cute little story.
I did too. And when I texted Chris Williams about it being online, he said, remember, I did this spaceship before Arrival.
Oh, that's an excellent point. Excellent point. Oh, other thing related to Mr. Taylor, I want to direct your attention over to the ramp. We talked on last week's show when we were mentioning about Sean Bailey being forced out of Disney Studios, and Drew had written this amazing, you did an interview with Chris back in March of 2017, and just last week on the wrap, you did almost a sequel to that story, sort of taking us behind the scenes about what happened. And also, I love the details of Bailey's office, you know, that wall of photographs from the movies. It's definitely worth seeking out.
Yeah, I heard people at the Oscars who brought up my story, and the folks at Disney sort of begrudgingly saying, yeah, he knows what he's talking about, you know.
All right. And speaking of things that will well be worth a read, Drew hasn't been able to talk about this until just recently, but you've been working on a book about Disney's Amphibia, that animated series that ran on the Disney Channel from June of 2019 through May of 2022, 58 episodes, much beloved. And this is coming out in November this year? Is
yes.
That correct?
A perfect stocking stuffer, Jim, for anyone in your life. No, it's a wonderful tribute to the series. I loved the series. I really worked to make sure that this would be something that fans would love. Perhaps too much when I heard, we have to figure out how to put so much text in this book. So, you know, that's always something you like to hear from the publisher.
Yeah, I know. But all right, do we know yet when we can pre-order?
It should be, actually, it might be up right now on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. I worked very closely with Matt Braley, who is the genius creator of Amphibia. And I felt like he was kind of getting things off of his chest. He was kind of looking back. And it's a really, really adorable book. And the artwork is absolutely stunning. And, you know, just like movies, the Disney Movie Club kind of celebrated things that weren't celebrated. You know, I feel like TV animation is so rarely given the opportunity to showcase its beautiful artwork. And this is it. This is a rare opportunity. So it's not quite as in-depth as something like the amazing DuckTales book, because we did not have, you know, 18 months to work on this thing. But I think you're going to love it. And I was just so happy to be along on the journey. And so The Art of Amphibia, yeah, it's coming soon, November 19th, I believe. So, yeah. Pre-order it now, and yeah, we should try to do some live things, so we will work on that. So yes.
Cool. Okay, and again, just a reminder about the Kung Fu Panda 4 screening this weekend.
This is on Saturday, March 16th. It's an official Academy LA screening, so you have to probably be in the Academy, but it'll be at the Samuel Goldwyn Theater at 3 p.m., and I will be joined by director Mike Mitchell, co-director Stephanie Ma Stein, head of character animation Sean Sexton, and Yuzi Wu, the head of locations. So, yeah, if you've seen this movie, you know how beautiful it is. You know how artistic it is. So come on down and we'll be chatting all about that.
And speaking of folks that Drew chats with, this, of course, brings up Charles Hood, your collaborator on Light the Fuse, the official Mission Impossible podcast. So what's going on with that this week?
Well, this week we launch our new miniseries, Jim, called The Directors, which I think you're going to get a kick out of, because we talk to people who have made famous Paramount movies about what influenced them and what Paramount movies they also love. And We're kicking things off, Jim, with Penelope Spheeris, who is obviously the director of Wayne's World and is an absolute delight. We talked to Zaz, the Zaz team. We talked to Jonathan Lynn about Clue. We have a lot of great episodes coming up, so check it out over there. And Jim, I hope you listen and I hope you enjoy it, because I know you love classic films and classic Paramount productions.
I do. And speaking of Zaz, I actually gifted Jim Shule a copy of Surely You Can't Be Serious, the book about Airplane. What great fun. We got a wonderfully funny book about a wonderfully funny film. And speaking of podcasts, we have a few of them here at Jim Hill Media we'd like you to check out. We, of course, have Disney Dish that I do with Len Testa. We have Looking at Lucasfilm, which I do with Brian Gahn. Eric Hershey and I will be doing a brand new Epic Universal podcast later this week. And his bride, Lauren, and I will be working up a new I Want That Too sometime in the next week to 10 days. Let's see. Also, Disney Unpacked, our first ever video series, which we've been producing in collaboration with veteran Imagineer Jim Shule. And this month's show has been about the history of Rock and Roller Coaster, starring Aerosmith. And next month's show is going to be about the various variations of Buzz Lightyear Space Ranger Spin you can find at Disney parks around the globe. And okay, as we head for the exits here, I want to remind you that you can find us on social media. And Drew, you are where these days?
I'm everywhere, but I mostly am still posting on X/Twitter and Instagram. But my handle on everything is Drew Tailored, like a tailored shirt. But if you want to know more about Amphibia and all this other stuff, please think about giving me a follow.
Cool. Okay. And myself, you can find me on Twitter, X, as well as Instagram as Jim Hill Media, and over on Facebook is Jim Hill Media News. Final favor before we head out the door here, if you could head over to Apple Podcasts and rate and review, well, not just the show you're listening to right now, Fine Tuning, but also Light the Fuse, the official Mission Impossible podcast, that would be very helpful. And I think for now, that's going to do it. So thanks for listening. And until next week, this is me saying goodbye for myself and Mr. Taylor.